This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. The debate over evolution and other established scientific explanations of life are, unbelievably, still going on. It makes you wonder, is the 21st century really so different from the 17th? Back in the 1600s, Sir Thomas Browne was the first modern science writer, but he was also entirely comfortable with spiritual understandings of the world. Sarah Montague had him as required reading back in college, but that was way before people were talking about intelligent design, so she decided to take another look.
Imagine a cross between a philosopher and a Boy Scout, or Darwin and Shakespeare, and you might get an idea of the character of Sir Thomas Browne, a 17th century physician and naturalist.
What reason not to go to school to the wisdom of bees, ants, and spiders? What wise hand teacheth them to do what reason cannot teach us?
In an age of polymaths, he was celebrated as, you know, the polymath's polymath.
Dr. Claire Preston is a professor of literature at Cambridge University.
He knows quite a lot about an awful lot of stuff.
The stuff Browne knew included 10 languages, the workings of plant and animal life, archaeology and scripture. And his natural intelligence was shaped by the molten nature of the times.
This is a period in which what we might call nowadays disciplinary boundaries haven't really been established. So the difference between, say, the speculative, the spiritual, the religious, the doctrinal, and the empirical, the investigative, the scientific, it doesn't really exist.
Thus, there are two books from whence I collect my divinity.
This passage is from The Religion of a Doctor, which made Browne a best-selling author.
Besides that written one of God, another of his servant nature, that universal and public manuscript that lies expansed unto the eyes of all. Those that never saw him in the one have discovered him in the other.
And when he talks about the two books, what he means is the Bible on the one hand and the book of nature. So he thinks of the book of nature as a kind of scripture. For Browne, the act of scientific inquiry is an act of worship. It's an act of adoration.
I cannot tell by what logic we call a toad, a bear, or an elephant ugly, they being created in those outward shapes and figures which best express the actions of their inward forms, and having passed that general visitation of God, who saw that all that he had made was good.
Browne's anticipation of the modern concept of intelligent design, an attempt to align religion with science, resonates with us today. Playwright Tony Kushner first discovered Browne in college.
Browne tries in his writing to adopt, I think, the attitude of both a man of science and a man of faith, and uses this remarkable language to apprehend it, and the more the language approaches it, the more the mysteries deepen.
Kushner later made Browne the subject of his 1987 play, Hydriotaphia. This Browne is on his deathbed, searching for the meaning of his life.
Unearth the urn, pop it open with a pick, remove the skull, crack it, brown like a nut, and in the bowl, in the seat of the soul, not even dust. Just the tattered white filaments of some spidery event. It is impossible to conclude anything.
If it is impossible to conclude anything, the historical Browne certainly tried with his second book, the dauntingly titled Pseudodoxia Epidemica, which means vulgar errors.
If it were done in modern times, it'd probably be called urban myth. It's an encyclopedia of all the things that we wrongly believe.
That a diamond is made soft or broke by the blood of a goat.
That an elephant hath no joints.
That the root of mandrakes resembleth the shape of men.
Of the pissing of toads.
That hares are both male and female.
That men weigh heavier dead than alive.
Concerning the beginning of the world.
Concerning the beginning of the world.
Vulgar Errors was translated into a dozen languages and went through 6 editions. It was the joy of cooking of its day, and it made Browne the greatest living authority on anything weird. Sort of like the X-Files' Fox Mulder. But for all that it debunks superstitions, Vulgar Errors testifies to Browne's faith. And Browne was always trying to test that faith, to crack the spiritual code by pushing the boundaries of knowledge. Take the famous chicken experiment, as dramatized by Tony Kushner.
Chicken A weighs 6 pounds alive. Does it weigh less when it's dead? If it does, then something has been lost.
What could it lose?
It could lose its soul.
Talk about stupid pet tricks. You did this one at school. It's empirical science 101. But for Brown, it was the purest intersection of inquiry and divinity, an attempt to weigh the spirit. The relationship between spirit and flesh, life and death, is the topic of Brown's greatest work, Urn Burial.
He is sent by a friend some what he thinks are Roman burial urns.
Claire Preston.
And he looks at these and is very struck by how anonymous they are. There's nothing much to distinguish them. There's no real way of knowing who any of these people were.
What begins as a survey of burial customs ends as something much deeper.
The final chapter of Urn Burial may be the single greatest piece of prose in the language, and he simply talks about forgetfulness and the erasure of memory, and says that all of our care in treating our dead, in memorializing them, in erecting fantastic monuments, are likely to be of little help in preserving their memory, because time, he says, time obliterates us.
But the iniquity of oblivion blindly scattereth her poppy and deals with the memory of men without distinction to merit of perpetuity. There is no antidote against the opium of time, which temporally considereth all things.
Urn Burial was the inspiration for Tony Kushner's play.
I think I wrote the play in part to have fun with this idea of you know, what happens to the individual when he or she dies, and how do you face your own extinction, and how do you conceive of it?
I want to be buried deep, very deep, but not too deep. Use that urn. Toss out the previous occupant, or better yet, throw me in there with him, and let us mingle. No markers, or, well, maybe just a little unpretentious stone. Maybe, here lies Sir Thomas Brown, scientist. Here lies Sir Thomas Brown, who made his wife miserable. Here lies Sir Thomas Brown, no grandchildren, but a genius. Shakespeare had nothing on him.
In his play, Tony Kushner makes Brown Shakespeare's heir, an artist who moves from the natural world he observes to fundamental insights about the human condition.
All my life, my words sought paths unknown to me. Along hidden tributaries they flowed and reached unforeseen conclusions.
Without any question, his enduring contribution is as a prose stylist. And I think that Brown is building his own immortality in his works.
Thus man is that great and true amphibian whose nature is disposed to live not only in diverse elements, but in divided and distinguished worlds.
For Studio 360, I'm Sarah Montague.
You can listen to all of our stories on science and creativity at studio360.org.